now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is The Ruck, the rugby podcast from The Times. It's been quite the most surreal 24 hours in Rugby World Cup history, really. In the end, three matches were lost as Typhoon Hagibis hit Japan, but the loss of life and the damage to regions across the country far outweighs any concerns about cancelling a few games of rugby. Amazingly, Scotland's tie against Japan did go ahead in Yokohama, and it provided the epic occasion we had all hoped it would do. It's the hosts who progressed to the quarterfinals as winners of Pool A, setting up a repeat of their famous fixture against the Springboks. And it also means that Ireland will now play New Zealand in the last eight. Wales were far from their best in beating Uruguay, but it was enough to avoid England in the knockout stages. No game for Eddie Jones's men this weekend, but will they be undercooked with the Wallabies waiting on Saturday? We'll have all the reaction to the final round of pool matches, but we have to start with the events of the last day or so. And really, after all the talk about the typhoon and it came into town, it was quite extraordinary in my mind, really, that the resilience of the people of Japan just to pick themselves up. And I think for us, certainly viewing in the UK, it was one of those sort of things which, you don't really understand the nature of what they have to deal with over in Japan. I mean, it's something that they've got very used to, but even by their standards, you know, this was a serious typhoon that was coming to town. And when you just saw some of the pictures and the images of how powerful the wind and the rain were in parts of Yokohama and Tokyo, I think they just did an absolutely amazing job getting that game on in the first place. And, you know, for me, it quite clearly shows that whether you agree with it or not, World Rugby's decision to cancel those games was absolutely spot on. You know, just to put it into perspective, you know, there has been, you know, a lot of people that have died in this typhoon. A lot of people still missing. Huge amounts of damage to the two major cities and beyond. So calling off a couple of games of rugby, I think, puts that firmly into perspective. But turning around and actually getting the tournament back on track, because there's no doubt that this was a defining moment in the Rugby World Cup. And having just had the most incredible tournament thus far, we didn't want it being defined by this, you know, perhaps even being in the courtrooms and by this decision by World Rugby. So I think to get that Scotland game against the host Japan on was incredible. And the game itself, given the build-up for both those teams, because, you know, I was picturing myself, you know, I don't think I've ever been in a situation where a game has sort of been in jeopardy of not being played, and then suddenly mentally having to get your head round that kind of situation, and particularly given what was at stake for both Scotland and Japan, and of course Ireland, in terms of, you know, watching that as well. And I just think for the two teams playing, they delivered. They gave us a wonderful, wonderfully enthralling, exciting match. And, you know, Japan and their momentum continued to march on. They were superb in this tournament. And I tip my hat to their coaches who have done an absolutely wonderful job. So Japan go through and, Scotland are out. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of soul searching in that Scotland sort of dressing room just to sort of find out exactly what went wrong. It's incredible that game was able to go ahead and the supporters were allowed to enjoy one of the most highly anticipated pool matches ever played at a Rugby World Cup. We sent the Ruck's Owen Slot out amongst the fans ahead of kickoff to sample the atmosphere.
I'm outside the Yokohama Stadium. It's 2.5 hours till kickoff. I've been here at least an hour already. Everyone was told to arrive early and they're arriving in their hordes. I'm astonished by how many Japanese shirts there are here. I thought there'd be a fair few kilts, but wow, they are few and far between in comparison. So anyway, exciting. I thought I'd come out and talk to a few of the fans. It's like doing a vox pop like they do on telly. So I thought I'd have a crack at that, see how versatile my reporting skills are. And I've spoken to a few Scotsmen, most of whom seem having this accent, which is a bit disappointing. I've heard some bagpiping, which gives it some authenticity. And as usual, I've made loads of friends. I hope you enjoy this. I am here with
Dougie
and
Alex
and
Catherine
and Nick. And I just want to ask you, what was your typhoon experience?
Brilliant.
Was it a
pretty? Yeah, we got loads of beer, loads of booze in, just sat in and hunkered down.
That sounds
strange. We had a Scotland game on the iPad.
Island game. Yeah, till the storm finished, and then we're here today, and the weather's completely different.
The storm was mega.
Yeah. All right.
And the shutters, the windows.
So you didn't feel too let down then?
No, because there was also an earthquake.
Yeah, you got all your value for money, didn't you?
0.3 earthquake in the middle of it all. So an earthquake and a typhoon and beer and snacks and a rugby match. And three men
to yourself. That's fantastic. Do you belong to any of them in particular? Or?
Well, I pretend to belong to him most of the time, but yeah. He's okay. All right.
And sense of relief this morning when you heard the game was on?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, I just looked at on the phone. Well, it was actually Alex had told me, a cheer, you know what I mean? And yes, the match is on, and we're a bit worried about how we're going to get here and stuff, whether it's going to be. But you come here now, and it's like nothing, and it's nothing's happened.
I just say the one thing that's more important is the people that have been killed, you know, and the people that are injured. That's more important. That's very, very important.
Here today, the weather, the change in the weather in 24 hours, you could forget how bad that had been.
Yeah.
Yesterday.
They're doing a minute silence before the game.
Yeah, well, that's
which is a good thing. Yeah.
Really good about that.
Okay, so I'm now with you're a Japanese man.
Yes, I am.
Wearing a kilt.
Thank you.
What's your name?
Masashi Tatekawa.
And why are you wearing a kilt?
I'm a bagpiper. I play bagpipes in Japan.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Why do you play bagpipes in Japan?
I once went to Scotland and hear the sound of the bagpipes. So yeah. I really I'm amazed and interested. So back to Japan, I began to play bagpipes.
All right. Yeah. Are you good at bagpipes?
not so good at
bagpipes. Oh, come on. Are you as good as those guys down there?
I know.
They're good, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah? Are they your friends?
I know them.
So you're a Japanese man wearing a kilt at the Japan-Scotland game. Mm. Which team are you supporting?
Oh, difficult question. usually for Scotland.
Yeah.
But today, Japan, I want to... Japan team, I know.
Okay, so if Japan win, there's still someone here to play the bagpipes. Yeah?
Yeah.
You have to take that
on. Yes.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. What was your typhoon experience?
We just stayed in our hotel for the whole day, looking out the window.
All right.
We didn't want to go out and get caught in it, so it's
quite
a boring
couple.
Story.
That sounds like a terrific thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
we had such fun.
He said yes with a sly grin on his face. Where were you staying?
In Tokyo, in Shinjuku.
Oh, okay, all right. So you felt it pretty much there then.
It wasn't as bad as the day before. We were in Hakone, which got hit really badly, so we got quite lucky with our plans.
Right.
It wasn't that bad.
How relieved that the game's on today?
So relieved. I mean, it's the whole reason we came to Japan.
Yeah.
So we are relieved.
How long have you been here?
Two weeks.
Oh, okay.
Right. I don't have a ticket, so she's relieved.
You haven't got a ticket?
No, I'm going to go and watch it in a bar or something.
There's lots of scalpers selling, but...
That's all right. I support England anyway, so...
Okay.
Outrageous.
Yeah. So, what about the game itself? Well, despite an early try for the Scots, Japan were just too good, going on to claim a bonus point victory, 28-21, the final score. It means having beaten Ireland, Scotland, Samoa and Russia, Japan go through as pool winners. The Ruck regulars Stephen Jones and Owen Slot were at the match in Yokohama. These were their thoughts at the final whistle.
Jonesy, your heart stopped beating?
No. My heart's not stopping, no.
That's good.
Otherwise, I'd be dead.
Do you mean has it stopped beating quickly, rapidly?
Well, I was trying to find something to say, whoa.
No, it was the most amazing thing I think I've ever seen. Japan were otherworldly. They're on a different planet. The funny thing is about this game, Owen, was actually Scotland played really well. I thought they were gutsy, but they started well. Really lucky with the refereeing of the breakdown. But I thought they played well. They ended well in a brilliant game. They came back strongly, but Japan were on a different planet. It was most magnificent spectacle, most brilliant exhibition of back play and wizardry I can remember.
Did you feel it was one of those occasions when you were seeing something that you hadn't really seen before? You're witnessing a game being played in a way that isn't, it's not done like that often, if ever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, compare that with the rugby we're used to, straight up and down, power play, sometimes good, sometimes bad, usually frustrating. It was joyous. And the one thing I did say in the Times is that, in my piece in the Times, is that it looked like the pitch had suddenly got bigger. It was like yards and yards and acres.
They found space, didn't they, that no one else can find.
Exactly. But they always seem to be playing in space. And, you know, obviously the way they offset their weight disadvantage was amazing. Scrummaging good. Line-out was terrible. But some of the genius behind them, the conviction and the confidence, was out of this world, out of this world.
When we spoke to Michael Leach, the captain, during the week, he was asked, what do you need to do to win? And he said, we have to be brave. And that's what I thought was great. And not necessarily talking about the courage in their defence, which you saw in the last 20 minutes when they were sort of manning the barricades. And that was another level to the game altogether. But yeah. It was their courage with which they carried on with that game, with which they persevered with taking the risks when they needed to, trusting their handling all the time, knowing when to give those marvellous offloads and when not to. They just got that so well.
They played it all the time. I'm not quite sure if they know how to shut a game down, really, but they didn't. And they knew that if they got four tries, they'd be unbelievably difficult for Scotland to come to catch and to over-qualify them. So it was just fantastic. You're quite right. But also, I think we should say that the basis of it, their forward play, what they did in contact, their discipline in contact, that you don't go smashing in, you just pick your moment and you have discipline with your body position when you go in. Mm. It was just out of this world. And you know, now we're thinking, well, of course, they'll never beat South Africa. I'm not so sure about that.
No, they're doing something that the other rugby nations aren't really used to. I mean, they shocked Ireland. Scotland knew what was coming and couldn't cope with it. The way they play at pace like that is a sort of way to run the power out of the legs of the Springbok forwards.
It is. Look, the Springboks are a different process. They're bigger, harder. I'm worried about the Japanese line-out against the likes of Evan Etzebeth or whoever they pick.
It was,
but I mean, if you get the Springboks thinking, if you've got to make them turn and make them alter their angles, alter their lines, there is definitely a chance. They've got the whole country behind them. We've had a rough couple of days. People have died in the typhoon, or in property's been wrecked around the place. There'd never be anything to make up for the loss of life, but in terms of the national morale, that didn't have to go a long way today, and it got the World Cup itself back on the road.
Yeah, Jamie Joseph said afterwards in his press conference that he was asked about the typhoon and the devastation, and he said that as a team, they knew they couldn't ignore it. So they talked about it this morning, and he said that they were inspired by it. They use it as motivation, as a way to lift the country. I thought that was pretty powerful.
It was pretty powerful. And, you know, Japan are quite a reserved race sometimes, but today they're all those dreadful old cross Atlantic rock songs. They were all clapping and cheering and having a drink, and it sort of became a cross cultural thing. But which they don't normally do. But my goodness, the atmosphere in the stadium, the joyous, the kids crying, etc., was just out of this world.
Yeah. Should we wrap it up with Omedetto Gozaimasu?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Come on, Josie.
Omedetto Gozaimasu.
Yeah. Congratulations, Japan.
Congratulations,
Omedetto
Japan.
Nippon.
Yeah. Nippon.
Omedetto Nippon.
So, Scotland are on their way home, but the result also leaves massive implications for Ireland, who now have to face New Zealand in Tokyo on Saturday. Joining us to discuss all the talking points from Pool A is the Times Irish rugby correspondent, Peter O'Reilly. Peter, a very warm welcome to you.
Thanks, Lawrence.
Just talk about Japan first. What an amazing World Cup it's been for them. How impressed were you with their performance, given all the circumstances coming into this game and, you know, all the talk about whether it would be played? It was a huge build-up, and Japan certainly delivered, didn't they?
Yeah, you know, as you've said on the pod before, Lawrence, you know, the typhoon Hijibis, you know, puts everything into perspective, and what happened this weekend overshadows everything. Having just watched the Japanese team beat Scotland in a pub in Fukuoka, you know, it's tempting to believe that something like this can raise the spirits of a nation. It doesn't really make a dent on the sadness and the tragedy of the past weekend. But yeah, when you were in the middle of a group of Japanese people who were enjoying the success of their team, it was tempting to believe that it was uplifting, especially the way that they played the game. It was such an advertisement for the game in this country, which is an emerging rugby nation. The offloading game that Japan played almost made you feel a little bit jealous, a little bit sad that, you know, as an Irish rugby supporter, that there was such a contrast with the way that Ireland played against Samoa the previous day, even if that brought joy to Irish supporters. But I suppose the point to be made also is that it puts Japan's victory over Ireland in some context. It shows that they are a serious rugby team, and it shows that they're, by making the quarterfinals, that their story isn't over yet. They have resilience as well as great skill, and they have a bit of momentum going now.
And I mean, you know, listen, there's been a lot of finger pointing, particularly towards world rugby. But I think, you know, just to put it into perspective, as you say, you know, people have lost their lives. There's people missing still. You know, the effects of this typhoon are quite far-reaching, but it would suggest to me that World Rugby perhaps did get it right. Maybe the message wasn't quite delivered in the right way, but they certainly did the right thing by cancelling those two games on Saturday. And what an amazing effort just to get this game today to go ahead in the first place.
Yeah, I couldn't think of anybody who was unhappy when the news started filtering through from Yokohama that the game was going to go ahead. It would have been devastating for the tournament. Whatever about, you know, World Rugby's reputation and all that sort of thing. I mean, they got a bit of a hammering, and justifiably so from on certain points. The fact that the game went ahead and was such a fantastic game of rugby, it feels like the slate has been wiped clean, that we're back to zero again, that we know our eight quarterfinalists, and that the tournament was so brilliant for the first 3 or 4 weeks and had a bit of a dip there and had a difficult couple of days, that we're back on track again now. And yeah, I agree with you that for all the amateur meteorologists out there and all the critics, they made the right decision. There was no option.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you what, the spirit of rugby very much alive. I saw that when the Canadian team realised that their game was cancelled, they went out and actually helped with the clear up effort. You know, the entire squad out there doing their bit, which was really, really heartening to see. Just talking about Japan a little bit more. Obviously, we now know that they meet South Africa in the quarterfinal. I guess they've got nothing to lose, really. The heroics of Brighton 4 years ago, what they've already achieved in this tournament itself. And as you say, Peter, the way that they're playing, they'll certainly cause South Africa some problems, for sure.
They will. There's a lovely sort of cyclical aspect to it, the way that, you know, that they meet South Africa again 4 years on. It's a fascinating matchup just in terms of the contrast in styles. You've got, you know, South Africa's bludgeon against Japan's rapier, and they will go in as underdogs. It feels like they're beginning to turn a nation on to the beauty of rugby, the way it should be played. And that's what's so exciting, and that's what makes Japan everybody's second favourite team.
Well, I mean, I think the thing that impresses me certainly is that it's not for the want of trying. They're not going to leave anything behind, are they? As you say, they play with such a smile on their face. They look like they're genuinely enjoying themselves. They're incredibly well coached. I think we have to mention that. Jamie Joseph, yes, and Tony Brown have done a superb job and all, you know, in terms of getting them organised. And as you say, the way that they play, lovely little inside passes on the offloads there. Just not going to ground, you know, that quickly and trying to keep the ball alive. So I'm really, really looking forward to that quarterfinal particularly. Peter, if I can turn my attention to the Irish now, who obviously play New Zealand, and the question that all my Irish mates, well, the one or two I have been asking me, is there anything that we can find to suggest that they can upset the All Blacks?
Yeah, well, we were talking to Tadhg Furlong about this earlier on. And, you know, psychologically, this generation of players is different from previous generations. Like Tadhg Furlong has played 6 test matches against New Zealand, but whether for Ireland or for the Lions. And he's won more than he's lost. You know, his record is 1-3, lost 2, drawn 1.
Wow.
Now, you can, yeah, that's incredible. You can argue that Ireland maybe caught the Kiwis on the hop a bit in Chicago a couple of years ago. I remember Steve Hansen said at the time that we were there more as tourists, and you know, that was a mistake that they'd made. The All Blacks weren't really keyed in. And if you were looking from a negative point of view, I suppose, or a cynical point of view, you could say that when Ireland beat them in Dublin last November, that it was at the end of a very long season for the Kiwis. But I think that's stretching it slightly. That was a bona fide test match win. There'll be a lot of Ireland players playing next Saturday who were there. So the Ireland attitude is that New Zealand won't be happy about this. Now, they will have looked closely at Ireland's MO, and they'll have a plan to counter that. And I would say the rugby romantics out there would be backing New Zealand, given the beauty of the way they play the game against Ireland's kind of brutal directness at times, the sort of directness we saw against Samoa. But it's still, you know, the Irish, Ireland can see themselves as underdogs going into this. They've nothing to lose. And they will know that New Zealand will be a little bit apprehensive, that they'll know that Joe Schmidt has done a number on them before, and that he's probably got something up his sleeve again. I suppose that's what we're clinging to. Also, the fact that Ireland haven't really produced one big performance for a while. Yes, they played well against the Scots, but we're talking about when they go against one of the top teams in the world, and there's a possibility always that they can produce that performance on Saturday.
Yeah, and listen, Peter, I mean, I've watched enough Irish rugby. Certainly, you know, I look at all those players, when you line them up playing for their provinces, you know, be it Leinster, Munster, wherever, and when they've produced their very best, I mean, that is a world-class team, and I think that's what they probably have to somehow remind themselves, because if the likes of Murray and Sexton and Furlong and, you know, all of the forward pack particularly, if they play anywhere near the way that they can play at their very best, then you know, and that's what I would love as a, you know, as a fan of this Rugby World Cup, because as you say, we haven't quite seen their best yet.
Yeah, you're dead right. I think key man as ever is Johnny Sexton.
Of course.
I haven't seen him looking as content as he was doing a lap of the stadium Fukuoka on Saturday night. He played 50 minutes, scored a couple of tries, nearly ran over the dead ball line. But apart from that, he was pretty faultless. But it was just telling that the way he finished his contribution was he slotted a penalty from wide on, sorry, a conversion from wide on the right. He knew he was coming off after that. He sort of gave a low five to referee Nick Berry as he ran off the pitch, which I think was a bit of a compliment for the refereeing performance. Thumbs up to the crowd, applause to the crowd, job done. So once he's on the pitch, you know, I know from talking to Sexton that, you know, he was disgusted at the fact that he didn't play the first test for the Lions in New Zealand a couple of years ago. He absolutely believes that he and teams that he plays for can compete against the All Blacks. And that there are chinks there. There are ways of unsettling the All Blacks, because he's been part of teams that have done that. So that's a big plus for Ireland. Also, the fact that the pack did a bit of a number on Samoa. Now, it's only Samoa, but the very fact that they had to do so with 14 men meant that they sort of had a license to go narrow. The interesting thing on Saturday is whether they have a couple of little moves that Schmidt has, you know, been keeping in his goodie bag for this very occasion. And if they, maybe two plays can work in this game, and if Ireland can get ahead of the All Blacks, which has been the secret of their success against them in recent years, if they can get ahead in the first half, then we have a game on our hands.
Absolutely. Well, listen, the heart rules the head for me on this one, Arnhem. I'm going to predict a big upset, and I reckon the Irish can produce something very, very special. So, Peter, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it, and we'll catch up with you later on in the tournament.
Look forward to it, Lawrence. Cheers.
Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With the game against France called off, England escaped to the seaside to avoid Typhoon Hagibis. Eddie Jones now knows that they'll face Australia, of course, in the quarterfinals in Oita on Saturday. Let's get the latest from the England camp and join The Times' Alex Lowe. Alex, no sign of any storms down there in the south of Japan.
No, it's been perfect training weather for England. The moment the game was called off, Eddie Jones had his logistics team working feverishly to move straight down here, away from the storm, into the sunshine, back to Eddie's favourite training base where he prepared Japan for the 2015 World Cup, where England were for about 10 days or so before the start of this tournament. And while Jonesy and Scotty have been holed up in a swaying hotel in Tokyo, I've been down here by the seaside and in the sunshine.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it, to see the contrast. I was on a FaceTime call with a colleague, you know, in one of those hotels in Tokyo, and literally the hotel was creaking. You know, he said there'd been a minor earthquake, and then you know, contrast that with where England are, obviously down in the south. This is clearly a place that Eddie Jones knows well. You know, he's come down there. He likes the training base. I mean, how have England spent their time? I think I saw a picture of them doing sort of sprint drills, sprint training, at the time that they were due to play against the French. So I suppose it's an opportunity to patch up a few of the walking wounded and get some serious quality training done.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when we saw Eddie on the day that the game was cancelled, he actually couldn't have come across any more happy for the situation to have played out as it has. There is an argument that England will go in undercooked to the quarterfinal. I actually don't believe that Eddie's worried about that at all, because he was going to name a half-strength team anyway for the France game. He was planning to make changes. So he's not worried. He clearly is very happy with bringing the team down here, not having the risks involved in playing a game. And yeah, on Saturday, when they would have previously been playing against France, they were involved in a full on training session. By the end, it was full contact with no padding, probably for about 10 or 15 minutes. Game scenarios. Eddie was calling them to play from a line out here and a rock ball there, and it was full contact. But they built up to it. First of all, sort of grip tackling, and then they wear these black sort of padding, so they can make tackles, but it's not full force. So it wasn't. I wouldn't say it would have replicated a test match by any stretch, but it was a full on session. And listen, Eddie's here to win the World Cup with England, and the France game was a game that England actually didn't need to play, and it's fallen really nicely for him to bring the team down here. They get extra prep time for the quarterfinal, and I think it suited England perfectly that they've been able to come down and spend an extra couple of days getting Jack Noel fit, trying to get Billy Vunipola fit, and focus on the Wallabies.
I was just about to ask that, actually. Any squad updates? Because obviously we saw images of Billy Vunipola walking around in one of those sort of aircast boots. Jack Noel, as you say, few bumps and bruises. Any indications from Eddie Jones as to whether, you know, he's going to be picking from a full strength 31-man squad?
That is, at the moment, that is their hope. So Billy and Jack Noel did not take part in that big training session on Saturday. They were doing extra sort of rehab drills. Billy was hopping from foot to foot, stability work really on his ankle. Jack Noel had a hamstring issue, and he looked much brighter, actually much fitter, and was being put through some drills by himself. It was interesting to see Billy and Eddie Jones engage in a long conversation at the end of that session, content of which I don't know.
Yeah.
But they were sitting on a tackle bag and having a long chat. But listen, Billy's massive for them, and they will give him every chance to be fit. And if he's not fit for the quarter, they'll keep him here in the hope he'll be fit for the semi-final. I mean, he's huge for them. So as it stands, their hope is that they'll have a full 31-man squad to pick from when he names his team on Thursday. The players, the full-on session on Saturday. They came down Thursday, had a sort of recovery day Friday. They trained fully Saturday. Today was a day off. They were on the beach playing some games on the beach and just chilling out. They'll head up to Oita tomorrow, Monday, and start the proper build-up to the Wallabies game and yet another World Cup quarter-final against Australia.
And Alex, with as you say, Eddie Jones was likely to have made quite a few wholesale changes to the team that would have run out against France. So he must know in his own mind what his best side is. He will play his best side in this game against Australia because it's knockout rugby now. But I mean, do you envisage seeing a team very similar to the one that ran out against Argentina?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think because England were through and it was in some ways a free hit against France, had that game taken place, i.e. they wanted to win it, but also they spoke a lot, the coaches spoke a lot about the need to keep all the players engaged in the tournament, and they didn't want to get to, you know, a semi-final stage or the final and have an injury or a suspension and have to call on a player who maybe hadn't played for 4 or 5 weeks. So actually their rationale for the France game was going to be to pick and Mark Wilson at number eight, to pick, I think Willie Hines was due to start at scrum half. Henry Slade was going to come in outside centre. They were going to make a number of changes to keep it as many players engaged in the tournament as possible, but it wasn't going to be their first choice team. And he had a free hit. They wanted to win the game, but they knew they were through. This game now, Australia will be England's strongest team, and I think England's strongest team is just about the team that played against Argentina. I mean, Joe Marler has been superb at Loosehead, and they do talk about Mako having to fight his way back into the team, and I think, you know, Mako is the ultimate Loosehead prop in modern day rugby, and I can see him starting, but I don't see too many other changes to that Argentina team.
Is that an England team selection just come through on your phone there, Alex? It's a few little pings going off there.
I wish it was that easy, Laurie.
Well, listen, with the England game called off, the team from the Times and the Sunday Times stayed safe high up in their Tokyo hotel as they saw out the storm. Stephen Jones and Owen Slott found the whole experience slightly surreal.
This is Jonesy and I on Saturday, it's 9:15, and we're joined by Tom Hamilton, who's a typhoon specialist from ESPN. I'm just wondering if it's worth not talking for a minute so you can actually hear our hotel tower creaking. And what's happening, Jonesy?
Well, we're on the 28th floor.
Yeah, and?
Why is the hotel moving southwards?
Why are we swaying?
Well, it's going back and forth, isn't it?
It is
going back and forth.
Quite extraordinary.
Tom, you're a seismologist. What the hell's happening here?
It feels like you're on a ship, doesn't it?
It does.
It really does. It's very disorienting.
It feels like you're on a ship.
I thought we just had 82 Asahi. But
yeah, well, it might have been something to do with that.
It is. You can see that there's something hanging off the ceiling, some sort of ornament, which is swaying to and fro. But like the earthquake earlier, which you laughed at me about.
No, we didn't laugh at you. It was a big earthquake. I felt it.
Yeah, no, we've had an earthquake already today. And,
so we're now in the middle of Typhoon Haggis. Yeah. Haribus. We've been laughing about it for ages. It's not very funny when in the middle of it, is it? Because I've now gone from the 28th floor to the 38th. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, we're laughing because it's surreal giggling, isn't it?
It is surreal, yeah.
Because we're standing here and Ireland have had a player sent off.
Yeah.
And our hotel is moving.
Yeah, well, which is the worst?
Well, I thought the red card decision was accurate but harsh.
Well, I thought it was harsh because Bundy Ecky didn't have a chance to... Whoops. Please keep still while I'm talking to you. Anyway, can we just go back to the hurricane?
Yeah.
The typhoon, sorry. It's horribly weird, isn't it? The whole thing's going back and forth. Do you know what that is? It's prepared for seismic stuff. The hotel is.
It's prepared for it?
Yeah, it is.
Goodness for that.
Well, I mean, that's an earthquake, but I got a letter from the hotel manager this morning. Said it's seismic
autograph. No.
Yeah, thank you.
Right. I got one saying they weren't going to be doing any laundry.
Oh, well, that's disgusting.
And they haven't made my bed.
I tell you what, that's awful. I don't care about the loss of property, but no laundry.
Did they do your... Because you're a senior.
Yeah.
Rugby writer. Did they?
They did. Yeah, they did, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then also they ironed it.
They ironed your bedroom.
Yeah, they did. All right. Shall we go back and watch the second half now?
Okay.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. Right. My room now is on the 14th floor.
Sounds like it was just as well that England were well away from the area when the typhoon hit. Alex, so much debate leading into this weekend, of course, around World Rugby's decision to cancel England's game and two other games. I mean, clearly, it now looks like a decision that was justified. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. And there has been a lot of contention about the decisions. But I think World Rugby, they looked at rescheduling, at moving some of the games. their rules stated, and the rules that were signed off by all the teams, stated that in the event of a game not being able to be played, it would be a 0-0 draw and 2 points each. And all the teams had signed up to it. But I think when they got here and the circumstances were that they did look at trying to move matches, trying to reschedule games, they were bound by the reality they had to treat every team the same. And, you know, the game that's just taken place here, Japan, Scotland, I mean, an extraordinary occasion. What a fixture, what a game it was. But actually, in terms of the World Cup, that game was no different to New Zealand against Italy. Italy had a chance to pull off a shock and qualify. They had to treat every game the same. And so once they had decided to cancel England, France and New Zealand, Italy because of the weather, and there was no question that that had to happen, they couldn't go moving Japan, Scotland to another day. And it was a really tough decision, and it was brutal. And I'm just so grateful that the game was able to be played tonight, because the repercussions could have been significant and damaging for the game. And I think there's been some angst along the way. But, you know, when you're here, and as I say, thankfully, I flew out of the path of the storm, but this was the biggest storm Japan has had in 60-odd years. People have lost their lives. You know, there were bigger things at play here than just games of rugby. But from a World Cup perspective, there was just no way those games could be played. And the logistics of moving to different stadia just, you know, was investigated, but ultimately wasn't possible. So as tough a decision as it was to cancel games at a World Cup, which has never happened before, I just don't see there as being a realistic alternative.
Yeah, and the fact that the game that mattered most went ahead, that Japan-Scotland game, and boy, did those two teams deliver. I was just saying that, or thinking to myself about how difficult it is to prepare for a game when you're not quite sure if it's going to go ahead or not, particularly given when the stakes were so high in terms of the outcome for both Scotland, Japan, and indeed Ireland as well. And I just thought, you know, it was a defining moment of this tournament. One, that the game went ahead, and two, the performance that Japan put in against, albeit a Scotland team that are, you know, that are not full of confidence at the moment, but take nothing away. I think Japan were magnificent. And for, you know, if you'd have said to any of us, Alex, before this World Cup, you know, Japan will host this magnificent tournament and they'll beat Ireland and Scotland, you know, we'd have probably laughed, wouldn't we? I mean, it's just been incredible.
Yeah. It's the day that the tournament should be remembered for, I think. I mean, the decision about Japan-Scotland to be played was different to Italy, New Zealand and England-France, because Saturday was when the storm hit. So the decision about playing this game was all about whether it was possible to stage the game given the potential damage that was going to be caused. And from what I understand from colleagues who were in Yokohama, it didn't hit Yokohama with quite the same force as Tokyo, even though they're only 20-odd miles apart. And even so, with the flood risk and everything, Japan and World Rugby did a sensational job in getting the game on. And with all the tension that had been around in the Scotland camp and the Japan camp in the build-up to this game, they both wanted this game to be played. From kickoff, you could tell just how much it meant to the Japanese and what an atmosphere it was in Yokohama. Just extraordinary. The noise didn't relent for 80 minutes. And Japan barely relented for 80 minutes. That first half performance was just one of the great World Cup displays. And, you know, they obviously got a bit nervous and a bit tired second half. And Scotland just had to throw the kitchen sink at them because they had to win by clear water in the end to have any chance to get through. And it was just one of those sensational sporting occasions which meant so much more to the Japan team than just winning a game of rugby and qualifying for their own quarterfinals, which was huge enough given that that was the target they had set themselves coming in. They got so close in 2015, winning three games and missing out. So that in itself was their overriding motivation. And then for the game to have been played and for what it meant to rugby and to the sporting landscape in Japan and what it should mean to the nation of Japan to have the game on and to then deliver that performance. It should be the symbolic day of this tournament. Whatever happens now, you'll do well to have a better, more emotive day than we've just seen.
Well, listen, I couldn't agree more. You know, wonderful performance from Japan, history makers, as you say, and sets up an absolutely mouthwatering quarterfinal against, of course, the mighty South Africa. Alex, just a quick word on Wales. They were well below their best against Uruguay, but they still top their pool with four wins out of four. Do you think Warren Gatland will worry about his second string, you know, how they performed, or given that
they're probably likely to put a very, very different side out. He was just happy to get through that, you know, and they're looking in pretty good shape, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it was just a game to get through, and that's not to be disrespectful of Uruguay, whose first half performance I thought was did them proud. I mean, they can go home having had just a World Cup to remember, really, with a win against Fiji and actually the way they performed against Wales, particularly in that first half, to go in a point down, having really given the Grand Slam champions a real test. But it was a game for Wales to get through. I think their biggest issue, the biggest concern will be how many injuries they can sustain and still challenge. We've seen Dan Bigger go down twice now with failed two head injury assessments in this tournament. He's huge for them. And, you know, Patchell's a good player, but Bigger is the heartbeat of their team, I think. I think he's magnificent. And do they have the depth to be able to cope with too many injuries? But what they do have is this sort of this bond, and it's not dissimilar to Japan in a way. They have a sort of a sense of teamship, of unity, that I can see them knocking off. I can see them knocking off France in the quarter final, because I feel they are a stronger team.
I mean, they're a better rugby side than France, aren't they? Full stop. Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at the quality that they've got, right from their captain Alan Wynne-Jones right the way through the back row, have been magnificent. And you know, I do see them as supremely fit as well. They know how they want to play the game. You know, when Australia came back at them in that titanic tussle, they had enough resilience and enough fitness to get over the line. So you know, I don't see them having any problem actually steamrolling France, and I think making their way into a semi final.
I agree. I think France have some wonderful talents, but it's the same old with France. They have some wonderful talents, but I don't think they have that unity that Wales have. And Wales have that in addition to having a Jonathan Davis. Let's hope he's fit. He limped off today. But Jonathan Davis, yeah, and Alan Wynne-Jones, just, you know, a colossus for them. They have world-class talents, but they also have that sort of club spirit about them, which I just don't see France having. So I can, I don't think Gatland will be too worried about the way it panned out against Uruguay. I see them as a semi-final team, and then they'll be looking beyond.
Well, listen, Alex, thanks for talking to us. I board a flight to Tokyo tomorrow, and I can't wait to get out and join you.
I look forward to seeing you out here.
So we now know our World Cup quarterfinal lineup, and what a amazing four fixtures we have. On Saturday, the 19th of October, you'll be watching England against Australia. That's at 8:15 UK time in the morning. And then swiftly followed by New Zealand against Ireland at 11:15. What a morning of rugby you can wake up to on Saturday. And then if that's not enough, on Sunday, the 20th of October, we go into the next two quarterfinals. Wales will play France again at 8:15 UK time in the morning, followed by Japan versus South Africa, 11:15. Wow. My thanks to Owen Slott, Stephen Jones, Alex Lowe and Peter O'Reilly. So, now we know the quarterfinal lineup for the 2019 Rugby World Cup. I'm on my way to Heathrow to get on a plane to Tokyo, so the next time I speak to you will be right from the heart of the action in Japan. Never miss an episode of The Ruck. Subscribe now via Acast, iTunes or your preferred podcast provider.
Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.